This week's parsha is Parshas Vayigash, and the pasuk in Parak Memhei pasuk Chavav says as follows: Vayagidu leilemar oidei seifchai. This is when the brothers return to Yaakov Avinu in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Canaan. And they told him the shocking news that Yosef was still alive. Not only is he still alive, but he actually is the most powerful man in Egypt. Yaakovino refused to believe it. He didn't believe it. Then the pasuk says, "Vayedabru elav es kol devar Yosef asher dibar aleihem." They told over to Yaakovino all of the words of Yosef that he told them. Vayares ha'agolais, and he saw the wagons, asher sholach Yosef l'asei, that Yosef had sent to transport him, v'atachi ruach Yaakov avihim. And then Yaakov's spirit was revived. The question is, what is the shaklavitari here? What happened originally? Originally, he didn't believe them, and then he did believe them. Something must have changed. What changed? Originally, he refused to believe what the brothers had been telling him, that Yosef is alive, he's the Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, and he didn't believe them. Then he saw the Agalos, and suddenly, v'atachi ruach Yaakov avihim. He heard what Yosef had sent to him, to relate to him, he saw the Agalos, and suddenly, v'atachi ruach Yaakov avihim, he was revived, he suddenly believed it. So as in the Lashon Gemara, may kara mai kasavar vil besaif mai kasavar. What did he hold at the beginning, and what did he hold at the end? I saw in the Mefarshim, to see Rav Gifter in Pirkei Taira, that when they originally told him that Yosef is alive, Yosef is chai, Yaakov believed them. I mean, these were the shiftei ka. It's not like he didn't believe what his sons were telling him. He understood that he was alive, that Yosef was indeed alive, and he was Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. What he didn't believe was that he was alive in a ruchniistic sense. He believed that he was alive physically, but that really wasn't what he cared about. He didn't care as much about the fact that Yosef was physically alive, but how could he be living in Mitzrayim, the Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, and still stay from? That's what was troubling Yaakovina. That's what he was not able to absorb. Okay, he's alive. It's wonderful, but like it's not, he didn't believe them. By Yafik Libai, there was something in his heart that was rejecting the entire narrative that didn't sit well with him, because he didn't believe that he was alive spiritually. For Yaakov Avinu to have a son that was alive but wasn't from, that wasn't something that would make him excited. And only when Yaakov heard that of what Yosef told him, and we'll speak about that soon, and also he saw the Agalos, and we know the Chazal that he was reminded of the Egla Rufa, which was the last sugya that they had learned together before they had parted. Yaakov and Yosef learned everything together. They learned Ben Zakunim Hulai. The Balaturim says that Zakunim is Zeroyim and Kachim and all the Shisha Sidre Mishnah, all of Shas they learned together. The last thing that they learned together was the sugya of Egla Rufa. And Yosef was sending a code by sending Agalos, that Agala and Egla are the same letters, v'atachi ruach Yaakov. He saw that he was still holding and learning. He was still from. He was still a Ben Taira. He was still remembering the Gemaras that they had learned together, the Taira that they had learned together. Then and only then, v'atachi ruach Yaakovim. Until then, it was nice that he was alive, but if he's not Shemer Taira Mitzvah, he's not Yerushamayim, so then it doesn't interest me. It's only once he saw that he was still ligging and learning, he was still holding and learning and involved in learning and discussing learning, and then and only then, Matzachi Ruach Yaakov Avim. This is exactly what the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, by the way, writes later on in Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk Lamed, on the Pasuk, when when Yaakov Avinu actually meets Yosef for the first time in so many years, Vayomer Yisrael Amusa Hapam. He says, now I can die. Achrei Ra'isi Es Panecha, now that I see your face, Ki Oidcha Chai, that you're still alive. Again, that same word, Chai. And Zakti Arachayim HaKadosh, Sha'af Shevade Yada Mikvar Shu Chai, he knew that he was alive. B'mitzios, physically, Aval Adayin HaYachayshesh, Shema B'yaysay Bein HaUmais, Nafal B'madrigasa, he thought that maybe because he was found amongst the Umais, he was so many years, surrounded and influenced and in the company of Gayim. So Nafim Medregasa, he probably fell from his heights that he had attained by Yaakov Avinu. The Ains and Nikra Chaim, that's not Chaim. But now Amusa Apam, Achre Raisi Espanecha Kiyad Chachai. Now that I see you're alive, not physically that you have a pulse, but I see that you're alive in a ruchniistic sense, that you're really, truly alive. That's when Yaakov Avinu was satisfied that Baruch Hashem, his Shiftei Kah, were all intact. His Mitasei Shlema, all of his entire lineage were still from and were still Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs. There's a Maisa that's, I think, fits perfectly with this. The great Baruch Ber of Kamenetz, Baruch Ber Leibowitz, came to America in the year 1929, before the war. And it's an amazing thing, if you think about it, that Baruch Ber was on this continent. When you speak about Baruch Ber, you think about, Europe of old and Kamenetz and Reb Chaim Brisker, and that he actually stepped foot on American soil. It's a big schluss for America. In fact, they realized that at the time, he had a meeting with the mayor of New York City. I don't remember the mayor's name, maybe Walker. I don't know if you have to get the dates, but I'm not sure. It might have been Mayor Walker. And he presented to him the key of the city of New York. It's like an honorary thing when a visiting dignitary comes to a town, the mayor presents him with some token, a key to the city. So they presented Reb Baruch Ber with a key to the city of New York. And I was in a grand center of Moshe Feinstein's house, and he showed me that when Reb Moshe went down to Baltimore once, the mayor of Baltimore presented him with a key to the city of Baltimore. And so he has this in his display, in his like Svarmshank. He has the key that was presented. He yarshin this from Reb Moshe, the key to the city of Baltimore. But the key to the city of New York was presented to Reb Baruch Ber when he came in 1929. And the mayor said something that was very notable. The mayor said that Rabbi Leibowitz, looking at his face, disproves Darwinism. This is a pircha on Darwin, on what Charles Darwin said. Charles Darwin is, of course, the famous mechadesh of evolution, and how we all evolved from apes and v'chule. So he says that when you look at Reb Baruch Ber's face, you see that such a person cannot come from an ape. Such a person had to be created by God Himself. This is what the mayor of New York, the Hakara, the ability for a non-Jewish mayor to be able to be masig such a thing was impressive. But that's what Baruch Ber had a hadras upon him, and you saw the Shechina on him, and even a Gayish mayor was able to be masig this. Anyway, he came to New York, and he was here for fundraising, which is why all the Gedalim who came to America, because this was the place to get money. And Reb Baruch Ber, before he arrived in America, he had already sent word to one of his Talmidim who had moved to America. He actually lived in Baltimore, and he wanted him, he was already, he made money here, and he was already established here, and he wanted, Reb Baruch Ber wanted him to come and meet him in New York from Baltimore. So he came up to Baltimore. His name was Kuppel Wolpert. And if, you might not know who he is, but the people in Baltimore know who he was. He was like, I think he was either the president or the chairman of the board or on the board of Nei Yisrael Rabbinical College, Nei Yisrael Yeshiva. He was a very big macher in Baltimore. And he happened to have learned by Rav Baruch Ber. But he already dressed like an American. He dressed with a bowler derby and like a, you know, like a fancy suit with a starched tie, and you know, whatever this fashion was back in those days in 1920s in America, that's how he wore. And he came up, he met Rav Baruch Ber on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, and he was in his whatever he was driving, I don't know, horse and buggy or a regular car, I don't know what exactly they were driving in those days, but and Rav Baruch Ber comes in to his horse and buggy, but he didn't really make eye contact with him. He was just like looking down. And at first, this couple of Wolpert didn't understand, like, why wasn't he embracing him? Why wasn't he giving him a kiss? Rav Baruch Ber was a very emotional, you know, he was a Baal Menagin, he was a Baal Hergesh, wasn't natural that Rav Baruch Ber, after seeing his Talmud for so many years, not seeing him for so many years, he wouldn't have given him a hug. And this couple Wolpert, like, all of a sudden chapped that he probably thought that he was no longer from. And he said, Rebbe, he says, I'm the same couple. I still keep Shabbos. I still wear tefillin every day. I keep Torah. I learn. He takes out of from under his shirt his tzitzis. He says, Rebbe, look, I have tzitzis. And as soon as Rav Baruch Ber saw that, he takes Kuppel's head in his hands and he kisses him and he says, Kuppel, du bist mein Kuppel, you're still my Kuppel. And he kissed him and he hugged and then they were able to continue on their, you know, on their way to. A couple helped him, I assume, raise money for the yeshiva. But it's a very parallel story. This is exactly what happened. Like, Yaakov Avinu, he understood that Yosef was still alive. But Yosef being alive alone and that wasn't enough to revive him. There are stories about Gedolim that they were, and it's a very hard thing to understand and it's a hard thing to say, but, you know, when some of their family members, like their children, were stuck, let's say, in Russia, they were able to escape and their children remained, and they were always worried that maybe their children became communists and weren't from, and they were almost like relieved, in a sense, when they heard that they didn't survive the war or whatever. That was almost like a sense of relief because they wanted their children to be alive, but only to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just having children that are alive, but not being able to be Shemir Torah Mitzvos, that wasn't what they wanted. They wanted the only way that Yaakov Avinu was able to be Vatchi Ruach Yaakov Avinu is when he recognized and realized that it was still the same Yosef, that Yosef didn't budge a kihuzeh from the Yosef that he was when he was in Eretz Canaan learning by Yaakov Avinu. That second pasuk, when it says that the children, after Yaakov didn't believe them, and it says, Vayidabru Elav is called Divrei Yosef Asher Diber Aleihem. He told them over. They told Yaakov all the words that Yosef told them to relate to their father. What words was that? What was able to revive their father? With the words, the agolas we understand, but what was the words that were spoken? So we have to go back and see what exactly Yosef told them to relate to the father, and then we'll get a very new glimpse at what Yaakov Avinu was happy about and what revived him. This is something that I heard from my Rebbe, from Reb Lippa Geldworth. If you go back to Perek Mem, Hey Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'gadetem la'avi, says Yosef to his brothers, I want you to tell my father, and this is what, of course, they would be relaying to him. V'gadetem la'avi es kol kivaydi b'mitzrayim. I want you to tell Father all of my glory, all of my honor that I have achieved and that I enjoy in Egypt. Es kol kivaydi b'mitzrayim. Now we have to know a certain Vilna Gaon. We've said it over many times, but listen to this Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says, going back to the parasha of Bnei Lavan tells Yaakov Avinu, "Umeasher li Avinu asa es kol hakaved hazeh." Yaakov Avinu was working for Lavan, and he, of course, got very wealthy working for Lavan because he had that the deal that he had worked out that he would get all of like the mutant tzayin and bakar. Very hard parasha to understand. There were striped sheep, speckled sheep. My Rav's son wrote an entire sefer. If you thought it was confusing when you were being Maver Sedra about the striped sheep, the speckled sheep, the this sheep, that, there was a whole sefer that he wrote just trying to understand all of the minutiae of that parasha. It's very complicated. But anyway, he actually ended up making a fortune of money by using a system of whatever of giving the animals certain things to drink and certain methods to get the animals to produce in a way that was genetically different, and he got to keep all the basically he usurped a lot of the cattle from Lavan, and the sons of Lavan were understandably not happy with this, and they said, "Umeasher le'avino asa es kol hakaved." He chopped all of the kaved from our father. What is kaved? He took all the honor. What does it mean? People are standing up for him when he comes into a room. What does it mean? He took all of the honor. So the Medrash says that when it says es kol hakaved hazeh, ein kaved ela kesev izav. You know what kaved is? You know what honor is? It's money. Money is what's on. That's what it means in the pasuk. Umeasher le'avino asas kol hakaved hazeh. He took all the cash, all the silver and gold from our father. That's what it means. And the Medrash brings a raya to this from a pasuk in Nachum Perek Beis. The pasuk says, "Bayzu kesef, bayzu zahav, kaved mikol klechem." Again, we see the word kaved in relationship to silver and gold. So when it says kaved, it must mean silver and gold. So maybe some of you are thinking, wait a minute, I think there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, ein kaved, ela what? Ela Taira. There's only, the only thing kaved, the only thing honorable in this world is Taira. What do you mean, ein kaved, ela kesev izav? Where'd the Medrash come up with that one? Is that really what we think? Is honor only silver and gold? That's what we honor? I thought we honor Taira. The Mishnah in Avos says, "Ein kaved ela taira." So Zakta Vilna Gaon, an amazing pshat. He says like this: if you take a concordance, I don't know how many people here know what a concordance or concordatio. We have it in the Beis Medrash, a few different types. It's very fat svarim. For my bar mitzvah, my uncle gave me a 4-volume, very old concordance. And what it is it basically breaks down the words of Tanakh by their words, alphabetically. So let's say every time it says in the entire Tanakh, Anoichi, it'll bring a list of it exactly where you find, like a little snippet from the pasuk, Anoichi Hashem Lekecha, Anoichi Penisi Abayis, whatever. Every time it says the word Anoichi, it'll bring it. If it's Ve'anoichi, that has a separate list. If it says, something else, every single usage of the word is listed. And you can imagine it's a very fat sefer because it has to list every word in Tanakh and break it down, to every diktuk version of it. And whether it's Eilech, Chaylech, Halachnu, everything is there. It's sometimes difficult to find, but today you don't really need it because you could just Google everything and it'll come up with all the words. But before Google, this was, or on Shabbos, this is what you would do to look up a word. Says the Vilna Gaon, who definitely did not need a concordance to figure this one out because he knew Kol HaTorah Kula Baal Peh. The Vilna Gaon says like this: every time in Tanakh that the word kaved appears, it's always malay. It's always chaf vav vez dalid. Chaf vez vav dalid. kavod, with its fullest, with a vav in it. The vav makes it mala. You don't need a vav in it. Sometimes it does have, sometimes words do include a vav in Tanakh, sometimes it doesn't. But wherever it's spelled mala, every time it appears, it's spelled mala. There's only two exceptions to the rule. Umeasher le'avinu asas kal ha-kavod hazeh, kavod is spelled chaser. And the pasuk in Nachum, Baizu Kesa, Baizu Zav, Kavod Mikal Kli Chemda, also the word Kavod is spelled Chaser. All the other places in Tanakh always spelled Mali. Why? Says the Vilna Gaon, the MS Ein Kavod Ela Taira. The only true honor in this world is Taira. How is a person honorable in this world? If he's a Talmud Chacham. If he's Taimich Taira, if he has a Shaychus to Taira, he supports Tamid Chachamim, he gives honor. Any Shaychus that a person has to Taira, that's honorable. That's intrinsically honorable. Now we know there's other types of kavod. People get kavod if they drive a fancy car, if they wear fancy clothing, if they have a lot of money, if they get honored by dinners, if their name is on a hospital. It's also kavod, right? But that type of kavod, money kavod is chaser. Wherever it says in Tanakh kavod, it's a reference to the real kavod, the kavod hamale, which is Taira. Wherever it's spelled chaser, only two places. Umeasher la'avinu asas kol kavod el kaza, meaning bnei eleven were definitely alluding to silver. No, they weren't talking about that. He took Taira away from Lavan, took money away from Lavan. So money for them it's kavod, but it's lacking. It's a kavod that's missing. It's hollow. It's superficial kavod. Baizu kesef, baizu zav, kavod mikam klechem, the pasuk in Nachum. Also, talking about silver and gold, that kavod is kavod that's lacking. In the lashon of the Svarim HaKadoshim of Chazal, we call this kavod hameduma. It's a fake kavod. It's a kavod that's hollow, that's superficial, that's fake, that's phony, that's fraudulent, that passes for kavod, but it's not real kavod. They're honoring people's checkbook. They're honoring people's, you know, what the trappings of that. It seems honorable, but it's really nothing. Well, you're driving a car. It doesn't matter whether or not you're driving a jalopy, or you're driving a Lexus or a Tesla. It doesn't matter. So why do people give you kavod? It's fake. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Because you're wearing a fancier suit, you're living in a fancier house, you have a fancier, who cares? It doesn't do anything intrinsically for you. It's fake kavod. It passes for kavod, because in this world they don't know what the currency of kavod is. But we know that the real kavod in life, the kavod that you'd want to pursue, is kavod ha-taira. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. So whenever the word kavod is spelled male, that's real kavod. That's ain kavod el ha-taira. When it's spelled chaser, those two places, kavod hameduma. This is what, by the way, the Mesillas Yesharim writes in Perek Yud Aleph, where he speaks about the evil of chemdes ha-kavod, that it's not so good to desire honor. He says, ha-kavod ha-miti, you want to know what real kavod, the fake kavod, that's something you should push away, that you should reject. But the real kavod, ha-kavod ha-miti, eina ella yediyas ha-taira be'emes. Knowing taira be'emes, really knowing a sugya well, that's deservant of honor. That's real kavod. V'chein amru zel ein kavod ela taira, shenemar kavod chacham yinchalu, mishnah navis. V'zulasai, any other type of kavod in this world, eina ella kavod meduma v'chayzev. This is fake honor. It's deceptive honor. Hevel vein mayel by, says Ramchal. It's hevel, it's trivial, it's garbage, it's nothing. There's no benefit for it. We look at people like, wow, they're celebrities and they're driving fans, they're walking up a red carpet and people are taking pictures of them, and you know, this is real covet. No, it's not covet, it's baloney. It's garbage. It doesn't mean anything, it doesn't do anything for them personally, it doesn't mean that they have accomplished anything of real nature, of real stature. It's covet amaduma. It passes for covet because people don't know what covet is. What's real kavod? The kavod of Taira, the kavod of being a Talmud Chacham, kavod of being Maker Taira, Maker Abanan. That's real kavod. So my Rebbe wanted to say like this. Yosef was relaying, tell my father, es kol kivaydi b'mitzrayim, all of my honor in Egypt. What did he mean? He wanted to know how big a throne he has? He wanted to know what type of car he's driving, what type of, how many servants he has. Is that really what Yosef wanted to tell his father? No. Es kol kevedi b'mitzrayim kaved malei. The word kaved is kol kevedi spelled malei. Tell him that I'm still Isaac in Torah. Tell him that I'm still machshiv Torah. Tell him that I understand that regardless of all the kaved that I have, I recognize and I know that it's all fake, it's all fraudulent, it's kaisev, it's meduma, and that the only kaved that I still maintain in Mitzrayim that's of any value is kaved HaTorah. My value systems have not changed. I still maintain that same ability to be machshiv Torah. You know, sometimes people are in yeshiva when they're young and they're standing up for gedolim and they're machshiv the Rosh Yeshiva and the Rabbeim, and they're like repeating everything that they say and then they go out into the world outside, and now they have a different perspective on what honor is. What's honor now? Getting the corner office, having your name on the, you know, on the name of the law firm, or being the chief surgeon or the chief of whatever, and being able to, you know, that becomes the new kavod. What happened in yeshiva? That was so many years ago. That was like, Yosef didn't do that. Yosef, as many years as he left the yeshiva of Yaakov Avinu, he still always was able to maintain his priorities and what was chashev by him was always Torah. He didn't in any way change. V'yigadetem la'avias kol kaved b'mitzrayim. Tell father all of my kaved that's malei, not the kaved that was empty and kaved ha'meduma, but rather I'm still machshiv Torah. I understand that this is all baloney. It doesn't get into my head when they bow down to me and they're all calling me the Moshe b'chol Eretz Yisrael. That doesn't do it for me. All I want to do is sit and learn and be able to be. To be the real, to be. This is what David HaMelech, by the way, said. David HaMelech was the king of Klal Yisrael. David HaMelech had anything that he wanted. And what did he say? Lule sayroscha shashua yazavati bani. If not for the Torah, my beloved, delightful Torah, I would have been lost in poverty. I would be impoverished. What does that mean? What do you mean impoverished? He's a billionaire. But I'm not machshir. The money is not what gives me wealth. It's Torah that makes me wealthy. And if I can't learn Torah, then I feel poor. Any day that I don't learn is a day that I feel I might as well just have nothing. What? Nothing. Because I'm not fooled into believing that this world is real. This world is not real. Money is important just to get by, to support Torah, to keep everything going. But it's not in and of itself of value to me. There's so many stories about showing how Gedolei Yisrael were machshev just Torah, and they weren't machshev anything else. Everything else to them was hevel v'rik. I'll tell you two stories. One story was with Rav Dessler. I love this story. It was. It took place in England. Rav Dessler was a Reish Kailal in England, and he was a Rav in London for a while. He lived in England for many years. And before, of course, he went to Eretz Yisrael and became the Mashgiach in Panovich. And he had one of the Avreichim in his Kailal. He was very into collecting Judaica and silver, and he had money, apparently. And this was during a tkufa that the economy was very, very bad. No one had money. Maybe it was by the Great Depression. I don't know exactly at what point this was. But people were selling everything that they had to raise money. They were selling their silver, their heirlooms, everything. They had to eat. Doesn't help if you have a brake front full of beautiful stuff if you have no food in the cupboard. And there was an auction somewhere out in the English countryside that they were selling, you know, people's heirlooms, people's things, to raise money. So this person was planning on going there. And he asked Rav Dessler if he'd like to come along for the ride. And Rav Dessler was a person that was curious by nature. He was interested in learning about, you know, the world outside. And he said, sure, I'll come along for the ride. Rav Dessler and him drive to the English countryside, and then there's like a certain building, and they in the building, that's where this auction was taking place. And the auctioneer starts the auction, and the first thing that was up for sale was a beautiful becher, a few hundred years old, with rubies on it, a very chashuv becher. And the bidding begins. It should normally be, let's say I'll use American dollars, you know, it should normally be at least $10,000. The bidding started at like $300. It was a joke. Like, no, and there was no one bidding against him. There was like, no one had money. This guy happened to have had money, and it was like maybe there was one other guy in the room that was bidding against him. It was $350, $400. The guy stopped, and, you know, okay, Zachalai, he gets, for $400, he gets like a $10,000 becher. And he's elated, this Kayla guy. And that was like the deal of the century. He goes and he pays the cash for it. He brings it back to his seat. And Rav Dessler sitting next to him. And this guy is like, the Kayla guy is like on cloud nine. Dessler says, can I look at it? He says, sure. So he looks at it. He says, wow, this is a really beautiful becher. He says, would you mind giving it to me? He says, Rav Dessler wants the becher? Yes, I'd like the... So, okay, fine, you know, fine, okay. The next thing up for bid was like a Seder plate, you know, from Prague, you know, 1704, and, you know, comes up for bid, and it should be a $20,000 piece, $30,000, and it starts again, $200, and like no one's bidding, one guy back and forth, $300, Zachalai. And the guy could not believe it. It was mamish, like a dream come true. He's like getting everything for nothing. And he like goes up proudly, pays the $200, and he carries this big, beautiful Seder plate back to his seat. And Rav Dessler says, could I look at it? He looks at it, beautiful. Wow, it's a beautiful Seder plate. He says, never really had a Seder plate. Would you mind giving it to me? He says, Rav Dessler wants a Seder plate too? Yeah. Okay, fine. And this guy's making mental note to self, never ask Rav Dessler to come with me again to an auction. So anyway, this scene repeats itself. Time with a yad and with a this and with a that. Different. He was like, by the end of the day, like there was like a crate that this, you know, Rav Dessler was like walking out with like this big, and you know, and this Kayla guy was Avo B'chafli Reish. He was like coming out with nothing. Rav Dessler mamish chapped all the stuff, and he came out with nothing. Anyway, he comes home, tells his wife what happened. Obviously, wasn't so happy about the day, the way the day progressed. Very bizarre. Rav Dessler basically took everything that I had. Masher Lavin Osas Kol HaKavod Hazeh, like what, you know. And anyway, okay, fine, whatever. Nasa V'Nishma, this is what Rav Dessler did. Fine. Friday, an Erev Shabbos, there was a knock on the Kayla guy's door, and there stood Rav Dessler with a whole crate in hand. And he gives it to him. He says, no, Rabbi, I gave it to you. It's B'lev Shalom. It's fine. He says, no, you think I want your thing? He says, you bought it. I never wanted it. It's yours. So he says, so Rabbi, why'd you do that? What was the point? He says, in life, the only thing that should excite us, the only thing that we should be honored about is Tyra. It's Yir Shamayim. That's all. That's all there is to this life. He says, when I saw how excited you were in the pursuit of making money, of getting things cheap, of being able to buy, to purchase, to possess silver. Okay, fine, they were Tashmishi Mitzvah, but it was the silver, it was the Kesef and the Zav, and you were so excited about it, and you felt that there was something honorable about it. He says, I wanted to temper that emotion. I wanted you to feel a little bit, to understand that it has a place, but not the place that you're giving it. And so when I was asking you for it, I was trying to like, sort of, you know, to burst the bubble a little bit, to make sure that you're deflated a little bit from this notion that Kesef and Zav reign supreme. And to remember a little bit that this is the world that we're living in, and you have to get your hasagas right. We have to know what we're machshev and know what not to be machshev. And when you're too machshev, kesef and zav, that's not good. That's not good. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman went on a fundraising trip to somebody by the name of Rabbi Yamin Benish Dennis. And this person was a very wealthy yid. And Rav Elchanan used to go to him keseder, and he knew his home well, and he was very generous. And Rav Elchanan came to visit him, but the night that he came to visit him on a fundraising trip, it was a very, very rainy, stormy, wet night, and Rav Elchanan's boots were all muddy, and his coat was full of dirt, and, you know, from the winds that were blowing. You have to understand, here in America, we're very lucky, because we have something called sidewalks and pavement and streets that are paved. In Europe, in those days, things were very different. There was mud roads. Everything was mud. So whenever you walked out on a rainy night, there wasn't a sidewalk and pavement and concrete to walk on. Those were too expensive. They couldn't afford that. So you basically were walking straight on mud. And it was like really like, you know, it was very, very messy. Now, this sort of Binyamin Beinish Dennis's house was very well appointed. There was white carpets, white rugs, and they had white couches. Everything was white in the house. It was a beautiful house. And Rav Elchanan knew the house, and he's coming in with muddy boots and muddy clothing, pants. Everything was muddy. And the last thing he would want to do is to dirty up the house of Mr. Dennis, Rav Dennis. So he went around to the back of the house and knocked on that door, because in the back it was more of a like a kitchen area, and it was just regular flooring. It was tiles, it wasn't carpet, it wasn't rugs. So he knocks on the door, and this Rav Dennis opens the door, says, "Rav Elchanan, what are you doing coming around the back door?" He says, "My feet are full of mud, my shoes, my boots, my coat. I don't want to ruin your beautiful home." He says, "Rav Elchanan, do me a taiva." He says, "Go back around the house and ring the front door of the house, and I'm going to let you in through the front door." He says, "No, it's fine. Let me just come in." He says, "Rashiva, please do me a taiva. You're doing me a personal taiva. Just come through the front of the house." Rav Elchanan, "My boots are going to... Just please." Comes around the house, again, knocks on the door, he opens up the door, and he walks straight in, and there was like Rav Elchanan's boot marks with the mud splattered all over the beautiful white carpets, rugs. He sits him down on the couch. The couch is white now. It's all brown and achy. And they start talking and schmoozing, and Rav Elchanan says, you know, towards the end of the conversation, he says, "Why did you insist that I come through the front of the house? Why did you insist that I, you know, why couldn't I just come in the back?" He says, "I have daughters, and I don't want my daughters, even though they're being brought up in such a beautiful, luxurious home, I don't want them for a minute to think that I am machshev money over Torah. How would it look to them if I open the door and I only let the Rosh Yeshiva come into the back of the house and not walk through the main part of the house? How would that, what would go through their minds? The message would be that, oh, you know, Torah is important, but it's not nearly as important as my rug, as my couch, as my luxuries." He says, "When Rav Elchanan comes into my house and the Gadol HaDar comes into my house and he messes up the rug and he messes up the couch, this is the greatest chinuch that I could give to my daughters, to ensure that they always know what's primary in life. That what's paramount in life is Torah and nothing else. And everything takes a backseat. If I have a beautiful house, it's only in order to give real chashivas to Torah." Now the PS of the story is that this Rav Binyamin Beinish Dennis, his daughters, they all married the leaders, the Rosh Yeshivas of Telz. The entire Telz dynasty pretty much comes from this Rav Binyamin Beinish Dennis. And I think Rav Gifter married a granddaughter of his, and the Bluchs, Rav Avram Yitzhak Bluch was a son-in-law. Rav Zalman Bluch married one of the daughters. Was it a coincidence that these girls chose to marry big Talmid Chachamim? It wasn't a coincidence. That's the way they were raised. They were raised to see that ain kavod ela Torah, that there's no, everything in life is just Torah. When a child is raised to understand that the only thing that's really chashuv is Torah, they're going to want to marry, they're going to want to either be Talmid Chacham themselves if they're boys, or they're going to want to marry Talmid Chacham if they're girls. if they see that their father is really machshav money and professions, and you know, if that's what's chashuv to them, then they're probably going to want to be professionals or be very wealthy themselves. Whatever our parents are machshav is generally what we're machshav. That's just the way it is. That's the way life works. Not always. Obviously, there are many people that push against it, push back against it, and try to find a different path. But very often, the hasagas of one's parents become our hasagas, whether we like it or not. That's just the reality. If we see that our parents are machshav money and luxury, then we will at least have a respect for it. But if we see that our parents are machshav taira and mitzvahs, tamid chachamim, that's altogether a different chinuch. That's a chinuch that all I want for myself, for my family, is taira, because that's what I saw my parents want. And this is the important lessons of this parasha. There's a million lessons in this parasha, but for today at least, the lesson is that that Yaakov Avinu was only relieved to know and thrilled to know that Yosef was alive when he recognized that Yosef still maintained his standards of Taira, of Limud HaTaira, of Chashivas HaTaira, and B, that what was relayed to Yaakov Avinu, besides for him seeing the Agalas, as called Divrei Yosef Asher Dibar Itai, what was the words that Yosef relayed to tell the father clearly? V'gadetem la'avi, as called Kavaydi B'Mitzrayim. Know that my priorities in life, that what I put on a pedestal in my life, the kavod ha'amiti, not the kavod ha'meduma, that's not what gets me. I have kavod ha'meduma plenty. That's not what I'm interested in, though. It's called kavodi, the kavod which is molevav, the kavod ha'taira and kavod el ha'taira. That is what Yosef insisted be told over to Yaakov, and once Yaakov heard that, v'atchi ruach Yaakov avim. Yaakov was only revived when he understood that the value system that he instilled in Yosef was still existent by him, and that all he cared about was to continue the Messiah of Torah, which he gave over to Ephraim and Menashe. This is the reason why we bench our children on Friday nights, Yisimcha Lakim ke Ephraim and Menashe, to be able to be raised in Golos Mitzrayim and to maintain those same priorities and the understanding that in Kavod El HaTaira, in Mitzrayim, is something that we want to give over to our children ourselves. And this is when we, Amir Tzah Hashem, are zeicha to have children of our own. This is a shmuz that we should definitely remember. Because whatever we're able to relay to our children, even in America, we could still give over that in Kavod El HaTaira. It's fine to have a nice house. It's fine to have a nice car. It's fine to be successful professionally. It's important to have money. You're going to need money to live and to support your family and to marry off your children. Amir Tzah Hashem, money is very important. But the problems start when we are prioritizing money as a value in and of itself. When we're able to understand that money is only chashuv when it's serving Torah, when it's serving chinuch, when it's serving kedusha, that's good. But when we forget that, and we say that money itself is something that I want to have money just for the sake of money, not for what it could do for Taira, not for what it could do for my family, for Kedusha, but just to have money in and of itself, that's chashuv, that's dangerous. Yisimcha lekim kefayim menashe, Yosef always remembered and always instilled in his children, ein kavod el ha'taira. And when we could do that as well, then we, Amir Tzah Hashem, even in America, in a gullus that's over 2,000 years, that we're waiting for Mashiach to come, and we're able to somehow be able to endure this long and treacherous gullus, we could do it, and we can continue to raise beautiful children that are from and loyal to the Torah, but only when we ourselves are conveying to them and benching them that they should be like Ephraim and Menashe, just like Yosef was able to instill in his children, Ein Kavod El HaTaira, we must do the same with ours. Have a beautiful Shabbos, Rabbi Yosef.